This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Limits, why don't you just tell everybody what you told me, because I think people might be interested.
Tickets, baby,
would love
tickets.
Tickets. You want to go to the Fanniversary event?
Tickets.
It's Wednesday, coming up in just 2 days. Dan Zangrilli is currently at Allegiant Community Federal Credit Union's newest location in Scott Township. He's there until 1 o'clock, so go out and see Dan and get your tickets.
Zangrilli Lays, da-da-da-da-da. You like that song, Bob?
I like that song.
There he is. Let's talk to Chris Carter from the Post-Gazette. He covers all kinds of things. You want to go to Chris for draft cover, NFL draft coverage.
And there he is.
Pitt things, Steeler things. You can check him out right now, 93.7thefan.com on our YouTube page, which you should subscribe to. It don't cost nothing. Hello, Chris.
What's up, guys? I also grade singing. And Joe, please stop.
Thank you. Don't quit my day job is what you're trying to say?
Yes.
Here we go,
yes,
Chris.
Yes, sir, very much so.
I emailed you recently on the situation at Pitt, the dilemma that Bob and I were just talking about, which is even if new athletic director Alan Green wanted to move on from Pat Narduzzi and or Jeff Capel, is he constrained by the money they would have to pay to move on from both of those guys? You told me a few weeks back that it's your understanding that it would be probably prohibitive until after 2027 to move on. Is that right? Tell us about that.
So here's the thing. Both coaches have contracts that go to 2030, not to the start of the 2030, but the 2029-2030 season. And Jeff Capel's extension just got signed this past summer. So you're talking about whatever buyout it was. It was reported to be a $15 million buyout before that extension. It's definitely higher now by a lot. Pat Narduzzi's buyout is significant. And all of this is tied to articles that we've written in the Post-Gazette about Victory Heights, about the money situation that Heather Lyk had left them in, all while the university is trying to find money to reach the house settlement on NIL money, which is going to allow them to spend to get $20 million in NIL money, but they need to find that money. And so you have those financial issues and NIL spending. You have trying to pay off this new facility that's not housing any of the teams that make you money. And you're trying to figure out how you're going to move forward with your coaches. And so if Pitt was able to fire either Jeff Capel or Pat Narduzzi and afford that buyout, they then also have to afford good coaches to replace them, most of their staff probably as well. And that's just that would put them even more behind the eight ball right now, where they're trying to find money just to build competitive teams. That's why I just think it's unlikely that either are being moved on from for at least another two seasons.
So that paints kind of a bleak picture if you believe they need change, because, and I totally agree with that, if you're going to attract the kind of coach who has to come in here after either of these guys leaves, it's going to cost you probably even more with a bigger buyout. So you're dealing with all sorts of money. So the question then, Chris, is where do they get the money? How? And I know for a fact that they do not have as deep a pockets when it comes to all these boosters. There are a lot of them who want to help Pitt, but they're not going to be willing to give the kind of money necessary to do it. So where do they go from here? What does Alan Green do in terms of trying to find new avenues for money? Because I don't know how many there are, but they're not enough to compete with some of the bigger schools around the country.
I think it's going to require business partnerships. I think it's going to require, tapping into the things that helped him. He helped raise Buffalo's NIL or NIL money and or fundraising money when he was there. He raised their money from Auburn when they got hit with the with COVID-19 and their numbers dropped. He got them back up into and above where they were before the COVID numbers. He's shown the ability to basically build a package that says, hey, donors, you want to commit more money to this stuff to make this work. But a serious question that I have moving forward is Pitt's reality that it's just going to be very hard. Even if Allen Green does a good job and does increase funding, everybody's increasing funding right now. And you look at these SEC teams, these Big Ten teams, these TV contracts. The ACC is just at a disadvantage. Let's just call it what it is. I think it may require Pitt needing to consolidate its NIL funds towards making one great program. And it doesn't mean fully abandon one or the other, but like competing in football is very hard when it comes to spending and being able to outspend teams. And even when you hit the jackpot as far as high school recruitings, like Sincere Edwards, really good four-star defensive end, started a lot of games this year. He's out. Why? He's going to get paid somewhere else, and other teams can always buy you out. So if you're looking at what's easy to build, it's something that I've wondered for a while. Would it behoove Pitt to say, you know what? We're going to still have money in football, but maybe put more of the balance to being a basketball school and saying, you know what? We're just going to pay to get, like, that way you can afford a Malik Thomas. You don't lose them to programs like Arkansas. You put all your money into being a basketball school. You could build elite roster, and then that's your calling card. Football, you stay kind of just okay. You kind of toe the line. But if you try to make a leap in basketball, maybe that's what you need to do. But the bottom line is right now, Pitt does not have the money behind it to go compete with the big dogs when they're recruiting both in the transfer portal and in high school. And I think the answer right now would be consolidating and figuring out where you can be the best with the money that you have. But Allen Green has a long way ahead of him to try to build up those funds and keep this university moving forward.
Chris Carter from the Post-Gazette. He is on the Fan Hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Chris, how much discontent are you sensing among Pitt donors regarding Narduzzi and or Capel?
I'm getting a sense that people are a little worried that Pitt's going to be stuck in the mud that they are right now. When you look at either team, both teams, I mean, it's just eerily similar, right? Like Joe, you and I were talking about both of their early seasons when Pitt football starts 7-0, and it's like, man, like they could be in the conversation to make the college football playoffs, and then they lose six straight to end the season. And then Pitt basketball's 12-2 to start the season, and there's bracketologists I'm talking to that said, hey, they're like a lock to be a 5 seed right now. They just need to not blow it. And now they've blown it, and they've gone, and now they're not even in bubble talks anymore. And the only way I can see them making the NCAA tournament is winning the ACC tournament like NC State did, and that would just be a miraculous run that would be its own right. So if you're looking at donors, the only thing that you can say right now, if you're Allen Green, if you're like, hey, look, you see what these other teams are dealing with. Look at Pitt's roster and how it's constructed. You got international guys like Papa Conte, Amsel Dulalich. You have the twins, the Diaz-Graham twins. None of those guys need NIL money because they're international guys. So that's money that you're saving up on. But still, Ishmael Leggett's a guy from Rhode Island. Zach Austin's a guy from High Point. Jalen Lowe is like the one legit like four-star U.S. NIL guy that you spend on and get. Pitt basketball isn't fully – It's still like kind of like manage what they're doing with NIL money. And so if you're a donor and if Allen Green's trying to sell to donors, he's got to be like, hey, look, this is what we're competing with. If you want these consistent teams, these other teams, they're winning in transfer portal. They're stealing guys from top tier programs that are leaving because they feel like they're not getting enough time. That's what Pitt needs to get more of. And I think I think donors are understanding that, but it's just frustrating to see both Pitt football and Pitt basketball fall off cliffs after great starts to their season.
Yeah, especially, I would say, well, both. But I had a feeling that there were going to be some bumps in the road for the football team, Chris. The basketball team, because it is a field of 68, I'm thinking they still can figure out a way to do it. But now I think that's over, short of winning an entire.
Yeah.
In this offseason coming up, I don't know how they go out and get the kind of people necessary. How do they do it? Knowing that if you're really going to get the kind of kids, I was looking at NIL numbers of some of the just names that you would recognize. We're talking about $2 to $3 million for one. Yep. Where do they come up with that money now, though? Who do they go after? Because I know a lot of the guys who used to fund the athletic program now have used that money to go and specifically try to get different guys. But also, the other side of that occurs is that if you put money into a player and that player gets involved in some trouble, it's a bad look for the guy who's giving the money up. And what do they get in return anyway, other than saying they're helping the university? Do they get anything, the people who are giving the NIL money?
So you might get like nice seats, you'll get agreements, you'll get opportunities to kind of be there and see the players and things like that. And I think that's something that Pitt's actually developing. Like there, I think there's been a lack of overall programming that's enticed people to commit more money in NIL over the past few years. But I think in the last like year or so, we've started to see that improve. I think that was something that Heather Lyk was trying to work on towards the end of her tenure with Pitt. But that's something that I think Alan Green is working on right now, from what I understand, as far as, you know, options like that, guys like Pat Bosick trying to build up things that could attract more donors to get more to put in more money. And I think that's what you also have to look at, is that like, look, if you want Pitt to at least win the Pittsburgh recruits, you got to be able to contend with the big dogs at least a little bit for money. And to you guys' point, like, if they go and get one guy, they're spending a ton of money there. Will they be able to build around a roster around them? It's like, well, bottom line is they need to at least be able to get some of those guys.
It's easier in basketball, portal, right, compared to football. You
much,
need a lot.
Much easier in basketball. And that's what I'm saying. Like, it might take Pitt as an athletic department saying, you know what, we're putting all our chips into basketball, because the money that Pitt football spends on all the different transfer guys they get and keeping guys like Eli Holston and Desmond Reed and all of the Sharks, you pile that up in a big pile, you might be able to go get Malik Thomas. You might be able to go get a five-star player who can just change the game for you. And I think that's what Pitt's missing right now. I think Jalen Lowe has had really good times at points this year, but they haven't had that killer, that guy that's tough and that's a leader, like Blake Hinson last year, like Jamarius Burton 2 years ago. And I think Jeff Cable did a great job finding those diamonds in the rough in the transfer portal and making it work. You look at Rick Pitino at St. John's right now, guys. He's got all transfer portal guys. He said, we didn't even bother looking at high school recruits, because that's not what today is about. And I think that's what Pitt has to be ready for, is if you want to win big, you got to spend big in the transfer portal.
Man, I have been watching St. John's, and they are a lot of fun to watch, Chris. But let's switch to football, because that's another one of your specialties, is the NFL draft. So I have a two-part question. One,
sure.
Would you part with your first round pick to get Matthew Stafford, or your second round pick? That's A. And then B, if not, who would you be targeting if you were the Steelers at pick number, 22?
21.
Who would you be targeting?
So your first question, no, I'm not interested in trading a first rounder for Matt Stafford. I get that people want a big name quarterback to come to town. I don't think that's the answer for the Steelers right now. I think the answer right now for the Steelers is they've been saying, hey, they brought in Andy Weidel. They want to build to be like the Eagles. They want a dominant offensive front, dominant defensive front, aggressive playmakers on both sides of the ball, and then have a solid quarterback. Like Jalen Hurts did a great job in the Super Bowl, but let's not make any mistakes. He's not in the elite tier. He's in that very good tier of quarterbacks. But I think that's where the Steelers are trying to get to, is like, look, sign Justin Fields. Don't break the bank in doing so. And when you do that, you spend this first round pick on a defensive tackle. This is a really great defensive tackle class. I personally like Kenneth Grant. I don't know if he's going to be there at 21, because his name is getting pushed higher and higher up lists, and I expect him to just blow out the competition here at the combine. But there's still plenty of other guys that are first round talented, worthy guys that could be difference makers on the defensive line. And to me, that's the pace that you need to be on right now. The Steelers right now, I see them. They have the potential to set the stage the way that Kevin Colbert did for Ben Roethlisberger in the early 2000s. When they drafted Ben Roethlisberger, they had a dominant offensive line, a really good run game, a couple playmakers on offense, and a nasty, aggressive, physical defense. And then Ben Roethlisberger came in, and all he had to do was be just the occasional playmaker and not make the big mistakes, and the Steelers would be a really good team. That's what I think they need to get to right now, but I don't think they're there yet. But there's an opportunity that if they hit on the D-line, they continue to develop the O-line this year, and I think they need to add a young wide receiver, maybe a young corner, and they put those units together, there's a chance that by next season they'll be ready to make that aggressive move to go get a quarterback that fits that team and then become a much better contender than they have been.
I agree with that strategy all along. I've said it. I think Fields is the natural guy to bring here. So my question to you would be, I still think that there is an opportunity for him to take his level of play upward. I'm talking about being decisive in the pocket, being better in the pocket. Mm-hmm. Do you see that with him? And if it doesn't work, okay, fine. You don't invest a whole bunch of money in the quarterback next year. You could readdress the whole situation. Do you see the ability maybe to take it to another level in his game?
I do. And I said this like when he was playing his first six games last year. I was like, look, he's doing some really good things, but there's still that extra level of just quarterback vision and knowing where your offense is that I think that he could just get a little bit sharper at. And if he does, it opens up so many other parts of the offense. That's why they switched to Russell Wilson. Like, I know Steelers fans just remember the five-game losing streak at the end of the season, but Russell Wilson came in and automatically unlocked different parts of the offense that Justin Fields just wasn't able to do because that's just he's not that experienced yet. And he hadn't had that feel for doing that in an offense yet. I think that he showed progress in getting there, but this is your chance now this year. Because remember, the only reason Justin Fields started the start of the season was because Russell Wilson got hurt in training camp. So now's your chance to say, Justin, you're the guy. There's no questions. This offense is built for you. Arthur Smith, you design more plays that are tuned to him. And you guys, from now until September, when the season opener is to be had, you just get this guy ready and have him know your offense. And I do think he has that potential because, again, his accuracy is there. When he sees where he wants to go with the ball and he's right about it, he can put it on the money. He has a cannon. He has the athleticism. He also has the size to see over the middle. So combining all those things, if you can just get him to be in a rhythm in your offense as a good decision maker, I think he could be dangerous. And again, to be like the Eagles, they want to get a dominant offensive line, you know, a dual running back threat. I don't think they'll bring back Najee Harris right now because of the money that it might require. This is a good running back draft class. You can draft a running back, I say, in the third round and get a good guy to pair with Jaylen Warren. But you could have that where you say, like, hey, this is a balanced offense. This is what you wanted it to be in the first place when you got Arthur Smith, so that Justin Fields doesn't have to always win you games and go off and for like 40 points and, you know, he throws four touchdowns. You want him to be solid, just making good decisions, keeping the pace of things so that you're a balanced offense. And I think Justin Fields can be that guy.
Chris, great stuff as always. You're a very versatile performer out there from one thing to another. Love reading
Swiss
your
Army
stuff.
Knife, baby.
Yes, sir.
Hey, man. You got to be in this industry these days, boys. But thanks for having me, fellas. It's always great to be here. I'm getting ready to head back out into Indianapolis and get ready for these combine. I'm trying to eat as much steak as possible while I'm out here.
I love it. Thanks, man.
See you, Chris.
Thanks, guys.
That's Chris Carter, postgazette.com. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Limits, that Italian pastry I just gave you. Give me your review.
Very good.
Bob turned it down.
That's
good. I just didn't want to eat anything right now.
How about this, Bob?
I'm trying a fast situation.
I mean, these are thin little wafer-like pastries.
It would
pastries.
Go against fasting.
The pastry was re-gifted.
You're literally fasting, Bob?
You were gifted a pastry?
It was gifted to you, Bob, and then it was gifted to me second.
No, I was going
to
offer you one anyway, but I offered Bob one first.
No, I'm just trying to see how long I can go without trying to eat anything. I don't know why.
Does that make you hangry? Like, I get very irritated.
We'll see. If I do, you'll notice it by the end of the show.
How about that shot? Do you like this indoor golf stuff, Bob?
I do, but I think a lot of it goes, it makes me less interested. I don't want to watch it every single week.
Did you see Tiger choose the wrong club in that last week?
They gave him
100 yards.
He heard the wrong distance or something. It was 199. He thought he said 99.
He said one of the most embarrassing moments of my career. Something else from the Dulac chat from last week stood out. Love reading Jerry's stuff at postgazette.com. In addition to claiming he doesn't know who Mike DeFabo and Andrew Filippone are, he was asked this, Bob. Someone said, off topic, but interested in your opinion, Jerry. What is your take on the Pirates and the infinite circle of frustrations for fans? I love that phrasing. Jerry says, I have no opinion on them because I don't follow them, but I feel sorry for their fans. Steelers fans should pay heed to what frustration and suffering really is. Love, Jerry, but here's one thing I'm getting really, really tired of. Is people telling Steelers fans how they should feel about the team's endless run of mediocrity. So you're saying basically there that a team that's petering along just above 500 and not winning playoff games is a world of difference compared to a team that's petering just below 500 and never winning playoff games? Like, I'm not getting the huge gulf there between one and the other. At least in not in recent, like many recent years. I'm not. Maybe you are. But the point there, Bob, is that Steeler fans have every right to be livid with the way this team is being run. Let me point out again for the 8 millionth time that they have not been competitive in a playoff game since the 2016 season. They haven't been competitive in a single playoff game. They're 38-32-1 in the last 4 years. 38-32-1 with a minus point differential, and they've been blown out of every single playoff game, including this last one, by their arch rival, where they gave up 300 yards rushing and were shredded on national TV as having quit by Kirk Herbstreit in the middle of a game. And Steelers fans are supposed to be thankful and comparing that to what the Pirates have gone through? I don't see all that much of a difference myself.
Well, the only difference is expectations. You know, every year there are expectations on the Steelers where there are none for the Pirates, quite frankly. So I think that's the difference that I see. The expectations still are here, despite all this, lack of playoff wins and how they got, ripped in the first quarter of these playoff games. That's an embarrassing part of this whole thing, and people should be mad at that. But I think with the Pirates, it's just that they're giving you no reason to think that there's anything coming other than another losing season.
I would say the Steelers are doing the same. You look nationally every year. Nobody expects anything from the Steelers anymore.
But I think their fans expect more.
Yeah.
And they're not getting it. So for that reason, you should be. But it's a little different than the Pirates. I want to see the Pirates, I think, again, missed opportunities to make a statement this offseason. And
all you're doing is wasting time with a generational
kind of player who could win the Cy Young on a team that finishes last place. That's just inexcusable if it happens.
It's just that the finger wagging to Steeler fans, like, hey, you could be the Arizona Cardinals, you could be the New York Giants, you could be the Pirates. I don't get it. I mean, you could be the Pirates. Have the Pirates won a playoff game more recently than the Steelers? When's the last time the Pirates
haven't won a series since 1979.
I guess they won a playoff game in 13, huh?
Right. Yeah, that technically doesn't count as a series, but it counts as a playoff win.
Yeah. I'd be plenty ticked off if I were a Steeler fan right now. And then not only that, you had the embarrassment of the way this season ended and no significant changes. None.
So far, no. And they're going to have, at some point, this is going to, March 12th is a day where free agency begins. There's a tampering period, all that stuff. We're going to see what they have in store in terms of where they go with their current roster guys on it and their futures.
Plus the idea of somehow gaining solace from the plight of Pirates fans. I mean, could you go any lower to gain solace? Like, man, I was feeling angry at the Steelers, but look at the Pirates. You could be them. Wow, do I feel better now? I mean, you have to reach all the way down to the Pirates to feel better. If you have to do that to feel better as a Steeler fan, that tells you that the Steelers are in a bad place, right?
Yes, and that's where they are. And it's, everything is cyclical to a degree here, but you're making it worse by some of the decisions that are made. So I'm going to be very interested to see what happens in the next several months here leading up to, when they get their whole roster kind of figured out. And it will be interesting after the draft to see what they have and how they address it.
Could I interest you in an Italian pastry, Bob?
No, thank you.
They're orange flavored.
I like that.
And there's not even that many calories.
Are you really trying to get me out of my little funk here when it comes to...
I'm afraid of your anger, should that come to pass.
I'm not going to show you any anger.
I think if you don't eat by 1 o'clock, you might...
Not true. I'm going to see how long it goes.
Are you drinking anything?
Water and a little bit of coffee, but that's it. Does that count?
I actually want to support that, and I'm sorry that I offered
it. I
want
to see what it does.
Pastry.
People say it's good for your system somehow.
Okay, we'll I'll support that.
At some point, though, I will collapse, and I will just...
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned, and way more sales going So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Bob, between the football talk, the hockey talk, the pit talk,
and
everything else,
talk.
Well, we haven't gotten enough time, or we haven't had enough time to get into Andrew Heaney coming to the Pirates. This was a fairly significant move. This is a legit starting pitcher. Again, a one-year deal, so they still haven't signed a multi-year free agent since, what, 2016 or 17, something like that?
Ivan Nova.
So what do we make of this? They bring him in. He's obviously going to be in your rotation, probably after or with, certainly after Skeens, Keller. Then I might slot him in along with Jones. And then who? Probably Falter. What does this mean? I couldn't help but wonder if it means or makes one of their other starters, either somebody in the rotation or one of their many prospects, more available in a trade, suddenly available in a trade, more palatable to make a trade.
I read it like you read it. And this is, they didn't need to do this. I thought Oviedo was a guy who eventually would be up there. They have guys who can be your fifth starter, if that's what it is. They decided they bring him in and fine. And yeah, he's had some success, but his overall ERA is typical what you would expect from someone the Pirates would be interested in on a one-year deal. Not all that great. But he's an innings eater, you know, similar to Bailey Falter, and that's always a good thing. But what does it mean? To me, it has to mean that you're going to try to do something to really enhance your offense, which doesn't have a lot of firepower in it. You need that. You need to have somebody other than O'Neill Cruz and Brian Reynolds hitting the ball. That's about it. So I think this could be something in advance of a trade. At least I hope so. And I'm to the point now where you have all these prospects. If you have to trade some of them, trade some of them. You're trying to win now. The window is Skeens. That's how I look at everything here for the next 4 years. You have Paul Skeens. You know at some point you won't. Do everything you can now, which is why this offseason has been disappointing.
I'm with you there. I mean, the ERA, it's not horrible.
It's not great.
It's legit. It's legit number three starter stuff. I mean, he's a very legitimate starter.
Okay.
You know, you didn't bring in a superstar, but you brought in a guy who I think most teams would like to have in their rotation.
Well, then why was he available when he was available?
Good question. Why do you think?
Because nobody wanted him. I mean, I don't know how else to answer that.
I mean, he looks like he played for Texas and was very good for them 2 years ago and pretty good for them last year.
I'm not going to downplay
that. He's just a leftover guy.
He's a leftover
but a legit
journeyman
starter.
Kind of guy,
yes.
Who can be in your starting rotation as a 3-4-5.
Well, that brings up the question. Would you make a deal with Keller, Jones, or one of the young guys? And if you want a hot take, Bob, I talked to this man to my left, the city dweller, before the show.
Austin Bechtold.
About how this might affect Bubba Chandler, because it would appear to make it less of a chance that Chandler would come north with the team. And when will Chandler be here? And my feeling is, if Bubba Chandler is one of your best guys, it's time to win. Let's go north with him. But this is what the Limitless Wonder says. And now he enters the conversation. Please.
I would personally keep Bubba Chandler in the minor leagues until late May, early June, because I think their starting rotation is a strength. I like the starters that they have. I don't think there's a weakness there. And I would rather the Pirates retain a year of service time with Bubba Chandler than call him up like Jared Jones on opening day.
I disagree with every syllable and half syllable you just said.
And quarter syllable. Go
and
ahead,
Joe does
I just,
too.
Go
again,
ahead,
my whole premise with the Pirates is Paul Skeens' era and his window. That's all I'm looking at.
Yes.
Because if it, eventually when he's gone, you're going to get back to where they always are. I would do everything in my power to come up with bats here. I think they're in a division that's not going to be outrageously good. I think they have an opportunity to compete in it. If not for the division, certainly with a wild card. I'm assuming that means if they go out and get some bats. They need bats. So to me, I'm doing everything I can right here, right now. And if it means he comes up now and plays, so be it. I got to figure out ways to get bats, though. And I think Ben Cherington so far hasn't come up with enough good examples of getting bats. Tommy Pham is not my example of an upgrade. So
Limits, your answer? I mean, you're a big Pirate fan. If he blows people away in spring training, I just don't know. It's time.
Well,
and
last
year, you have a small window here. I don't care anymore about saving a year, 6 years from now, on Bubba Chandler. What good does that do me now?
Well, I mean, I think about it this way. Last year, Jared Jones, it was such a necessity that they needed him in the starting rotation, because the year before, it was literally Oviedo and Keller. They had two starters, and Oviedo was hurt. Like, last year's rotation desperately needed somebody like Jared Jones to start it off. This year, I mean, Bubba Chandler is going to be a star.
Yeah, but using that philosophy that you just threw out, they should not have brought up Jared Jones, even if he was ready. You know, they're trying to always wait, start clocks late. I'm to the point where the clock is already, to me, we're on daylight savings time here.
And
I want to go back.
And this guy has a chance to be a star.
Yes, he does.
See,
how about if he has a great, like we asked Andrew Destin this about Henry Davis. If he hits the cover off the ball, he should be on the roster right now. Because they don't have a lot of bats who are capable of doing that. We'll see what it means.
I feel like, and it's what the Cubs did with Chris Bryant, and it might have been seen as just wrong in the moment or whatever it was, but Chicago still got another year out of a guy that was an MVP because they kept him in the minors for 2 weeks. You want to do that with Bubba Chandler? Yeah. I would have did the exact same thing with Jared Jones. I was okay with him on the start opening roster.
2 weeks is different than 2 months, though.
Whatever it might be. Three weeks, 2 weeks, I don't care. I would rather have that year of service.
You said May or June.
I did, late May, early June, even if it's then. It would not be middle of June. Middle of June, then I draw a line. He's got to be up here. But I would much rather have him ready and have another year of service time than anything else.
You're talking about 8 starts for him in April and May.
Yeah.
8 or 9 starts. I'm not willing to just give that up. I'm not. Why isn't Heaney appearing, Bob, with the ERA leaders from last year? He made 31 starts, and I don't see his name in here.
What was his ERA last year?
4.28, which would have been...
That's why.
No, it's not. That would have been better
than...
Well,
we've gotten to the point where 4.28 is looked at as wonderful pitching. Not in my book.
I mean, Mitch Keller was 4.25. He's the same as Mitch Keller and
exactly.
Charlie Morton. I just don't understand why he's not listed here.
Well, I don't know why, but maybe not enough innings? Although
no,
he had a lot of innings,
he had 31 starts, right?
Yeah, I thought so.
Maybe it's a mistake, Bob, and I apologize for taking your time.
No, but I am on the same page as you with this. I want to see something now. I don't want to keep waiting and pushing, and then you're going to push Paul Skenes right out the door. The question then becomes, how long does he actually stay here? How long is Paul Skenes? Because they will not let it get to the point where they're going to just let him go for nothing. They will have to trade him at some point. When is that point?
I don't know. I want them to come north with their best baseball team.
Yes, me
period.
Too. Whatever that may be. And don't stop trying to improve it. Go out and look.
And I would absolutely consider trading anybody on the team but Paul Skenes. Anybody. Any one of my pitchers, I would trade to get a correlating bat in here. In other words, if you trade a guy with electric talent who's a young pitcher like Jared Jones, then I would want a guy who has electric talent as a 23-year-old batter. You got to give to get. Or
those guys might be in their minor league system, not yet ready to come up. But if you cite somebody
right.
who is good enough and it's a high prospect, do it.
Or Mitch Keller, a just sort of a below all-star level but still good player who's still in his 20s, I believe, his late 20s. Give me a hitter like that. I mean, they have this surplus of pitching. And then there's also, you know, doesn't it just figure that the Pirates' strength in 2025 is starting pitching at a time in history when it's never been less valuable? Right, Bob?
Yeah. I mean, most guys do not go deeper than 6 innings. And so it puts a heavy emphasis on a bullpen. And that's mostly self-inflicted decisions. Sometimes I think these guys are more than capable of going, but they don't do it anymore. It's become the managerial way of doing stuff. To me, I think Paul Skenes should go as long as he wants to go this year. If he's cruising along at 7-8 innings,
so do I.
Just let him go.
So do I. Who was it we had on earlier? Destiny's Child was talking about Skeens and how long he can go into games, and they want to protect him a little bit. I don't really want to protect him. I don't want anything malicious to happen, but he wants to pitch.
Right.
I have a short window with him before he goes to somebody for probably $500 million, and I'm going to get the most out of him. And the way I get the most out of him is 7, 8, and 9 innings. He strikes me as the kind of guy who can handle that. So let's go here. 7, 8, or 9 innings. Do you agree with that limitless one?
I'd be completely fine with that, yes. He's capable of doing that. Like, with Skeens, there should be no restrictions, no chains on him.
What are you protecting him for, the Yankees?
That's what I mean. There's only so many years here, and it's not going to change. They're not going to, and it's a shame. I would like them to be able to say, hey, we're going to pony up for this guy.
I think the opposite should happen than what maybe Andrew was intimating, which was you got these young pitchers, man, you got to protect them. And again, I'm not saying you go out of your way to like completely overwork them to the point where it's dangerous. But I'm pushing it with those guys. They're my best chance to win. You know, if Jared Jones is pitching a great game, like he was last year when they took him out after 57 pitches.
Yeah, that was a little bit much. And if that happens
let's
again,
go here.
Year two, that should not happen again.
No. Let's utilize that. Let's go. And I think Bubba Chandler, if he's one of your best five, and I think he will be this spring, put him in your rotation, Bob. If you gotta space out with like a spot starter like a Bailey Falter. I mean, can we agree that Bailey Falter may have maxed out for about 4 months last year?
I liked what he did, and I hope he can continue what he did because he gives you a nice little option on the left-handed side.
I know, but in his last 9 starts, what was his ERA,
not
6
good.
Or 7?
Not good. But you can make the same claim for Keller.
Well, I know. I make that claim every year. But wouldn't you rather have Bailey Falter as a spot starter, long relief? You're going to have injuries. Why does he have to start in your rotation?
Because he's lefty.
Here were his ERAs, by the way, the great Bailey Falter. In June, 5.63. In 2 starts in July, 4.91. In August, 6.53. And in September, 4.5. I mean, Bob, he came up and had a couple really good months, and that was pretty much it. What are we doing here? Bailey Falter or Bubba Chandler?
Yeah, if that goes beyond Bubba Chandler. If any of those other guys down there is ready to go, I'm bringing them up now. I know they're not going to do it. I know they're not going to go out and sign anyone in free agency to multi-years and spend hundreds of millions of dollars. But, I mean, I don't know how you change the dynamic of where this thing is going.
How do you feel about that twinner circle?
Yeah, I don't know. It's the whole thing is just difficult for me at this point. And
is Bailey Falter a guy here?
He's a fifth starter, and maybe he needs their fourth and he's their fifth,
and
whatever.
And you give him 2 months over Bubba Chandler when you're trying to win.
I just feel like the service time is more important, and it's just unfortunate that that's the reality that we live in.
Why, and I mean this respectfully, are you hung up on what might happen in 2031 with Bubba Chandler? He'd probably be traded by then anyway.
Yeah, but you still have an extra year that you're able to use for whatever you get back, or I don't know.
I want these 8 starts now. That's my whole point. Use these guys now.
Window's open, baby. Let's go
the
through it.
The window is open.
And if you don't, you're just going to continue to kick everything down the road with the same old narrative, the same old results.
I was looking at the lineups in the NL Central. Theirs is the worst.
By far.
By far. There's at least 3 that are way better than them. But they may have a pitching advantage. They may. They certainly do with Skeens.
But
they
again,
may rotation-wise.
All that'll mean you're going to be in one-run games, which will force Derek Sutton to believe he has to go to the bullpen a lot for matchups.
Or he might go to his bench where he'll find Adam Frazier and who else?
Adam Frazier can't make the team, can he?
Yeah, of course he's going to make the team. Him and Ron Cook's son, Billy. And who else is coming off the bench? The human rain delay? Are they kidding me?
No, he's still there. You got an RBI
yesterday. I can't wait
yesterday.
To see opening day who their bench is, what their bench is.
Jiwon Bae will be on it somewhere, probably.
No, Bae won't be on it.
You don't think so?
Who will? Give me their bench.
Henry Davis.
He's not going to be on the team.
He's going to be on the
team. I think he will be.
I think he
will. And
won't
if he's
be.
On the team, he should play somewhere.
Okay, so you have a guy who had more strikeouts.
Okay,
than...
don't you, again, you got to believe that at some point he's going to make adjustments and get better, right?
No.
You don't think that? He's just,
is he?
Are you going to call him a bust right now?
No. But is he a guy who's reliable? I think he should play.
What would
but
you
if
rather...
I'm looking down my bench and I see Henry Davis in game one, I'm not feeling great.
He was the number one overall pick. What makes you think he can't get back?
Different question. I think he could.
Okay. Well, if
at
he could.
I think he could at some point.
He has a nice spring. Hits the ball like crazy,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And he's on your bench.
He
you
hits
feel
the ball like crazy every spring, Bob. And then he goes to Indy and plays right. Roger Maris. And then he comes up here and he's Brian Bixler.
So what do you want to do then? Not use him at all?
You're basically calling him a bust. No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
So far, he has been.
Okay, but you're not willing.
I don't
willing,
know what he's going to do.
But you're,
I'm
you
talking,
just say if he's on the bench, you're going to be mad.
No, I'm going to not feel great about my chances of getting a hit. Now, who else would be on your bench?
Who do you think will be on their bench?
The human rain delay?
I think, well, no. I mean, I think Davis is going to be on the bench and Delay will be in the minors. Jared Triolo.
They don't have any more options on Delay, do they?
I believe they don't. If not, they'll just DFA him and he'll end up clearing waivers anyway. Palacios is going to end up on their bench as their fourth outfielder. And then probably either Cook or York, one of the guys that have versatility, they could bounce around.
That bench stinks.
Yeah, and that's assuming that like Derek Hall or Stewart ends up being their first baseman.
Hall and Oates?
With Horwitz out.
Do you know how many first basemen they've gone through over the last
Horrible.
23. Gormy the Owl reported it 23. As 23.
So are they going to continue to do this? That's my Vlad Guerrero take. That's why I'm tired of watching that, because they're spending more and more money on people who don't make a difference. Isn't that wasting money if you're a small market?
Yes.
Right? Isn't that doing it the wrong way?
Yes. I'd rather spend
it on one guy.
So would I.
Make it a good guy and say that's it.
Was just going to say that, Bob, and quote you or whoever else has been saying that. I'd rather spend the money on one guy than have 18 different guys who can play 18 different positions. How about one guy who's a good hitter who plays one position limits? Could we get to that at some point?
Pete Alonso would have been my guy. $20 million, stick him at first base.
That's very doable, $20 million.
Very doable.
And if they're not, then get out of the game. You know, I mean, come on. At some point, you have to do what you got to do.
This is a disaster. It's going to be Joey Bart catching. Okay. DJ Stewart at first. Nick Gonzalez at second. A shortstop who can't play shortstop. A permanently injured third baseman. A center fielder who's a shortstop. A right fielder who's a left fielder. And a left fielder who's washed up. And a crap bench, Bob.
But this, you know, again, okay, whoever's at first base. DJ Stewart, you say? Or Spencer Horwitz? And then they had, who do they have? Colin Moran. They had Connor Joe. Well, didn't they?
Rowdy.
Yes.
Will Craig, Carlos Santana and his orchestra, Alfonso Rivas, Yoshi Sestuku. You know, I mean,
Carl Malden. You remember the rundown with Will Craig between first and home,
Bob?
All
the Kaleida piece.